Blog Talk Radio.
An education summit. Any chance Mayor Ken could get educated first himself? With the implosion of our no economy, can't get a business license, Doniana County. Ken's kingdom of cognitive dissonance is really starting to come apart. Wow, I guess being a no-growth area is no big deal except for kids. And we don't need any money from the state except for our kids. Ken doesn't care about state funding, only $1 million. But how about sanctuary city, county status when we lose federal funding too? Las Cruces and New Mexico in general are a laughingstock compared to the rest of the country's economy struggling along as usual. Yet despite the U.S. trying to get back from a decade-long recession, Cruces is still led by persons who claim to not want growth. What the... Bleep. So how do these so-called leaders stand up and cry crocodile tears over the kids' budget? Whose fault is this? Unfortunately, we live at a time when the general population is so distracted, uneducated, and misinformed that folks can't even tell the difference between cause and effect, leadership incompetence, or socialism versus constitutional republicanism. No more deranged gay evangelists or pompous and imperious no-growth goofballs. Time for new leadership in Doniana County, ones who don't talk down to their constituents or pretend it's a flash flood when they're merely peeing down your leg. Good morning, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. And, so there is a cost to being a no-growth area, and it means that we are very dependent on outside funds. So kind of like welfare mother can go around and tell people how independent she is, Doniana can pretend that we're independent even from the laws of economics. Really dependent on the state, aren't we? When the mayor gets up and gives a speech about the poor little kids, we're going to get cut off from funding if there's a budget battle. Why can't we, on the other hand, grow our economy and be more truly independent and self-sufficient? And by the way, isn't Mayor Ken also behind the sanctuary city status of the county and the city? Doesn't that mean that he doesn't care if we get our federal funding pulled too? I mean, I'd like to know what the numbers are, federal funding pulled, state funding pulled. Where would we be? I mean, since we don't have our own functional economy, I think it would be a very dire scenario. 523-1450 if you have an opinion, but 805-618 to text. But I mean, it's just more smoke and mirrors, you know. People who get up and say this is a no-growth economy, do those people have jobs? Do they have businesses? So they really don't care, do they? What about everybody else, though? What about the people that can't find a job and their kids are poor as well? And we have a phone call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Kelly. This is Ben Rossin. How are you this morning?
Ben Rossin, the sponsor of the show.
Yes, sir.
What a pleasure.
Hey, Kelly,
what's going on?
You had a great opening this morning, and part of it is when we start looking at the funding that the county and the city receives from both the state and the federal area, it isn't something we can just turn our back on and say, oh, we don't need that. We're going to raise the gross receipts tax over and over again. And that's kind of what we've seen from both the city and the county.
Well, haven't you seen these girls that have a number of kids outside of wedlock? And then they brag about it, how independent they are, but they're actually getting a lot of funding from the state for their independence. I mean, it reminds me of that. Ken's going to get up and say to the state, take your $1 million. We don't need it. Well, we desperately need it here. And are we really, Ben, I'm really concerned about this sanctuary city nonsense. What if if people don't think that Trump has the cojones to pull the plug on federal funding for Doniana County, I think they got another thing coming.
Well, and Kelly, on that note, I've talked about it before, but we get a lot of our road funding from federal money. Baylor Canyon, Dripping Springs, Soledad Canyon, those are all from federal money. We got just in January, we got about $3 million to deal with mental health issues in the state, or excuse me, in the county. And those are really important issues, and we need to be very careful and be very aware of what we're doing and not just go in there on emotion, which is what I think we're seeing a lot of.
Any chance you could run for mayor?
No, I hope to seek re-election on the county commission here next year, Kelly.
Well, I mean, it's sad that we have to stand up and say we only get $1 million from the state, which I doubt is actually true. There would have to be somebody do some research on this. But I mean, the idea, and I've said it to you and you shook your head yes and said, yeah, that's true. People brag about this being a no-growth area. But at the same time, like the welfare mother who's so proud of being independent, we don't have anything to take the place of the state or the federal funding.
That's right.
I got another call.
That's right.
I got another call here. You're going to be on Thursday, right?
I'll see you on Thursday. Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes, sir. Kelly, your friend.
Bob, what's up?
Well, I think Greg Smith is going to be a shoe-in when Ken retires.
He's going to be a shoe-in what?
Mayor.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Well,
love you.
Thanks a lot. All right, so Greg Smith. But, I mean, where does Greg Smith stand? He gets up and signs this same thing, don't build your wall near us. Is Greg Smith, who happens to be a real nice guy and comes across as a modest person as opposed to the mayor, who's so full of himself, is Greg Smith another lefty? Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show.
My name is Joshua.
Can you turn down your radio?
Yes.
Thank you. That's the satellite effect there. What's going on, Joshua?
Well, I was just hearing about the budget thing that you guys are talking about, and I'm just wondering, wouldn't increasing the budget to be able to bring businesses in help out like with later on future for like the kids
yes.
and stuff like that to
yes.
give them better opportunities?
Well, don't you want your kids to have jobs when they graduate?
Well, exactly. It just doesn't make any sense for them to try to cut, not have businesses come in, and that's kind of like killing the future here.
Yeah, so Joshua, in what other city of our size is losing a business with 400 positions an absolute catastrophe like it was here?
That I have no idea. I'm originally from Wisconsin, so, I thought, Milwaukee was bad, but I got here and, job market was so bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, the leadership of the city and the county have bragged about this being a no-growth area. To me, that is just the most irresponsible thing that I've ever heard. Don't the people who live in this county have a right for a job?
Well, exactly. I mean, I find it sickening when I try to find, anything. And I mean, even, the cost of living here is so expensive, but you try to find a job. And I mean, you can't find anything that's paying more than $10 an hour, unless if you have a 4-year degree, and even then, even with a 4-year degree, you can't even really find a job at all. It's ridiculous.
It reminds me, it just suddenly reminds me of a conversation that I had when I lived for a short period of time in Utah in a city in the South, St. George, and I was told that when these, businesses tried to come in. I'm trying to think of the builders, Lowe's or whatever came in and said, we've got jobs. We're going to build the store. We're going to pay people $15 an hour. For some strange reason, they had to agree that they would only pay people $10 an hour. And I'm thinking, why would the city do that? Well, I guess they want to have control, but this city is, I mean, how is it high-minded to say we're a no-growth area? I've said this before, but if your wife gives birth to a premature baby and you take it, it's brought over to the premature area and the doctor comes up and says, well, you'll be glad to know this is a no growth area. That's insane.
Yeah. That would be super aggravating.
It's absolutely crazy. I mean, we need leadership in this town that is not afraid of capitalism, who doesn't think that they're better than the people here and are not full of crazy ideas. How about just a normal city with regular growth? And then we don't have to worry about the state cutting us off.
Exactly. That's how I feel about it. I mean, originally, when I was younger, I used to think against that, but then I got older and I got smarter. I realized that there needs to be money. You need to have businesses come in and actually help out the economy. And this is, seeing a lot of the stuff here, I mean, it's hard to live here.
It is, and they don't. They don't care. The mayor has a business, so he doesn't. If it's a no growth area, it doesn't really harm him. Billy Garrett has a job, and he's got a federal retirement. He doesn't care about. I mean, let's get somebody in the game who is pro growth.
Exactly. I feel the same way. It's just. It's so bad to see that they're so against having a business come in, to actually help the economy. It's they look at it it's bad, but it would actually probably bring more people to live here and actually be able to afford living here.
Yeah, and I mean, then the people that go to that grow up here, we're a very family oriented community, and that's fantastic. But the kids grow up, they go to NMSU, and they have to leave to find a job. I mean, what kind of a county? I think we had a couple of 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we had 300 job growth in a year in the county, and therefore we lose a business, Sitel, with 400 jobs. It is an absolute freaking catastrophe. It shouldn't be that way here. Got to go, Josh. Thanks for the call. All right, folks. So is what I'm saying so controversial? Is it really controversial, Mayor Ken, to say that we want to have growth here? 523-1450-805-6180. We need people that are – we need leaders, I should say, that are people first, that are citizen or resident first, who are not caught up in all – you know, it comes from socialism and being caught up in far leftist ideas that are just fantasies. The earth is burning to a crisp, right? Until it wasn't burning to a crisp, and so they changed it to climate change. Capitalism destroys the earth. If it wasn't for capitalism, who would cut down the trees and remove the stumps so we could grow food? I mean, this is craziness. 619 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. We'll come right back. And I've got many, many stories. 523-1450 and 805-6180. I'll be right back on the 21st of March. I got some doors for you this week. One of the great American bands, of course. I just got a text to ask if I would ever consider running for mayor. What a waste of time. I mean, you know, when Mayor Ken's going around and, you know, the one thing that I've ever heard every single person who ever talked about the mayor agree on is that he's condescending. For whatever reason, he's very self-satisfied. He's very pleased with himself. And yet, in this city, mayor is a symbolic position. He's just another member of the city council, and the real leadership in the city is from the manager, right? Another reason why, I mean, so the mayor has a bully pulpit. What does he use it for? What's his goal? What's his purpose? You know, I mean, is he planning on running for Steve Pierce's seat? I'd like to see Ben Rawson run for mayor, win that, and then take over for Steve when he gets done, because I think Ben is about the finest politician in this county, you know. So it's discouraging to and here's this clip from the mayor, if you want to know what I'm going on about, and this is from KVIA.
Standoff over how to fund New Mexico state government and public schools during the coming fiscal year is showing no signs of quick resolution. Bills that would authorize $6.1 billion in state spending and companion revenue increases from taxes and fees had not yet reached the governor's desk because of clerical requirements. Governor Susana Martinez is promising to veto tax increases approved by the legislature and call lawmakers back to Santa Fe to renegotiate a balanced budget. Let's get the very latest on the story from our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom.
Well, Rick, while many of you are out enjoying spring break this week, administrators in the Las Cruces School District are forced to sit at home for 3 days with no pay. It's all part of this bigger budget problem. The mayor actually brought that up during a meeting at City Hall.
We just didn't have enough money to get to the administrative group.
Teachers across the Las Cruces School District had their furlough days restored, but 231 administrators did not. It's in order to make up for the state's budget shortfall. The district will save $230,000 in salary savings and $50,000 in employee benefit savings, totaling $280,000. Administrators like Associate Superintendent Elizabeth Marufo are taking the hit.
Furloughs are tough on employees. It means a loss of pay. It means it has an impact on their family.
This comes as the governor is threatening to shut down state-run facilities.
I'm concerned. I mean, when you have a government shutdown, people are out of work. They aren't getting a paycheck during that time. We've already got the highest unemployment in the country.
We really don't rely on the state funding too much, other than some road improvements.
Las Cruces Mayor Ken Miyagashima says while the funding for the city wouldn't be affected, it's the schools he's worried about.
It's very dire there in the schools. They're very concerned whether or not they're going to still have their jobs.
We've had a significant hit already, and we hope that it doesn't happen again.
The mayor plans on holding an education summit sometime in April to address any concerns. Reporting live from Las Cruces City Hall with our New Mexico.
An education summit where he goes down, where he just talks down to people. I hate to say it, but I mean, I'm just stating the obvious. Every single person that I know who's commented on him, I'm sure his wife doesn't believe this, but every person that I know that has commented on the guy is like so condescending. I mean, what does it mean when you're condescending? I'm sure there's a psychological explanation for why some people have to be condescending. To me, it's like you're insecure, therefore you're going to treat everybody like a moron. But putting that aside, which is perhaps just an obnoxious personality trait, is there anything that the mayor could do to help grow the economy so that if the state cuts off funding, it's not a catastrophe to the kids? Just wondering, you know. I mean, or to the state government, and then pretending that we're above state funding when, number one, New Mexico is like the number one state for funding, for state and federal funding. To pretend like we're above it, it is to me like a welfare mother who's living in a nice place, has a nice car, talks about how independent she is, and she's getting, you know, bucks for the government for having all these kids. It's crazy to run a county like this, a city like this. And, you know, it's a closed topic because these guys have bought into leftism, which is this insipid, semi-religious, fake religious movement that the first thing it does is convinces people that they're smarter than everybody else. So where do you go from there? Remember when Obama got into office, you know, Obama didn't even want to talk to people when he got into office. He was too good because he had been convinced, he had been flattered into thinking he was the world's smartest guy. And, you know, it's just not leadership. I'm a liberal, therefore I'm smarter than you is not, it's not a move that you make that goes anywhere productive. You know, we need people who will set aside their political bias, especially crazy political theories that are indistinguishable from a cult, and start working on the local economy. 629 Kelly O'Connell, just my opinion, of course. 523-1450 and 805-6180. Be right back.
Riders of the storm. Riders of the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown.
Kelly, this is Bob. The reason I'm calling is to tell you that when I went up to the mayor's office late last week, I talked to Roseanne, and Roseanne told me that Chen right now is half Republican and half Democrat for an office where they're undeclared. So that's what's going on concerning Chen. I know you're not happy, but I've talked to
wait
people.
Wait a second. Wait a second. Wait a second.
Bob.
Okay. Bob. Where's the proof all that he, where's the proof that he's any conservative at all?
Well, you have to know the guy. You know, you have to ask him questions and listen and then try to let him know. I mean, you can't have an opinion. You got to be open.
How about this? I watch him and listen to him, and I draw the conclusion that he's very, very far to the left.
No, he's not.
Oh, come on.
I met his dad, and I met his brothers, and he started out that way, but he's been through 3 divorces, I understand. And he's starting to change. He's bending, okay. And now you're good, Kelly. And I'm gonna do something very nice for your business. But what I want to say is that, you know, there's a wedding invitation that's going to be coming your way, and I'd be honored if you show up at the Civic Center. All right.
I may be dressed like Mayor Ken.
I love you.
All right, man. I'll talk to you.
Bye bye.
I just got a phone call and was informed that Mayor Ken is now half Democrat and half Republican, and that he's been through 3 divorces and he's seen the light. And, you know, seeing the light means falling to your knees, doesn't it? And, you know, having a conversion experience in this case into conservatism. I mean, I've asked this question before, I don't argue with people in general over this stuff. Like I said, I'm politic in my private life, but I mean the positions that conservatism takes they're unanswerable. If you were starting a culture, if you were starting an empire, you're starting a state, and you wanted it to grow into a mighty empire, would you start it out as a socialist state? I mean, the question answers itself. Socialism is weak in so many different ways, and socialism brings weakness into human affairs. And we're weak right now because we've brought in all of these lefty ideas that are a distraction. I mean, think about this. One of the reasons that the people who are running this city and this county don't want growth is because of global warming. I mean, to me, that's insane. I mean, but besides the fact, and I mean, you can get up and you're indistinguishable from the worst, most obnoxious, speaking of which, most obnoxious cult member and you get up and you misuse your opportunity to serve the public, to service your own ideas, which are totally unproved, because as far as I can tell, global warming really can't prove itself, you know? I mean, and here's where the rubber meets the road. If global warming is true, why hasn't all the ice burned off the earth? You know, why haven't the seas risen 20 feet like they were supposed to 10 or 20 years ago? Why? Because global warming's a hoax. Now, does human activity raise the temperature on the earth? I have no idea. How do we explain all of the significant weather anomalies? Well, I would say there's always weather anomalies. The earth is a gigantic place, and there's always something weird going on somewhere. But I've actually got a clip on this. But my point is that you've got people who are using ideas that are indistinguishable from a religious cult, and they're doing it to the detriment of the community. And it's unprovable stuff that will never be proved. Because it's really, you know, if you look, you want to be a chess player, a checkers player, or a chess player. Look at the picture behind the scene, you know, and see that global warming is used to control people. It's used to control governments. It's used to move large sums of money around. And then you'll see what's going on. Some people say follow the money. Now, Mayor Ken signed us up for ICLEA, Local Government for Sustainability, founded in 1990 as the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. It's Agenda 21. It's sustainability. And so if he's so far to the right, why would he, you know, so anyway, I don't want to get started on a Agenda 21 rant, but here is what I would challenge the mayor to do. Go read some Adam Smith, the guy that single-handedly changed the history of the world by illuminating what real economics is about. One of the greatest breakthroughs in history. 638 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces 523 1450. Here's a little love note to Mayor Ken. Ken, time for a conversion experience out of leftism.
I wandered so aimless, life filled with sin. I wouldn't let my dear Savior in. Then Jesus came like a stranger in the night. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
Thank you.
You know, and I yeah, this is just another politician in town, the gay evangelist, Mr. Gaylord. The kind of stuff this guy gets into, trying to reduce the age of drinking, marijuana laws, gay marriage. I mean, all of this stuff that's not just trendy. It's just, you know, this guy's like the prince of low-hanging fruit, you know? And where's the vision in that? If your so-called leadership is just tapping into the latest trend, hoping people will think that you're cool or whatever, where's the leadership in that? Isn't that following from behind, which perhaps is fitting for the gay evangelist, the Swami of Salami, the homosexual apostle, the Shah of Sodom, the Pied Piper of perversity. Anyway, here's a little bit on global warming. I thought it was a spirited debate, but you think it's a settled topic? Check it out. This is from a couple of days ago. Well, a couple of months ago, actually.
Science, and I use that in the loosest term possible, the science of global climate change. Our next guest is a physicist. He said,
and this is on MSNBC, believe it or not.
Carbon dioxide emissions are something that the world has seen for its entire history and can actually be beneficial to an ecosystem rather than a burden. He argues that rising CO2 levels are only very weakly linked to rising temperatures and actually would increase productivity. He wrote a big piece with another person that was actually on Apollo 17, one of the astronauts, in the Wall Street Journal a week or two ago that we're going to show you a shot of. But he's Professor William Happer of Princeton University, who co-wrote the article in the journal called In Defense of Carbon Dioxide. It appeared in the journal a couple of weeks ago with Dr. Harrison Schmidt. And you're a physicist, so we're immediately going to hear that you're not really you don't have enough background to be judging climate science at this point, and that 98% of climate scientists say there is a link between carbon dioxide and warming. You say there's not, or a very weak link.
Well, you can look at the record, geological record, and you know, we have proxies for carbon dioxide over millions of years, hundreds of millions of years.
And we're at 400 parts per million. Right. In the past, we've seen what type of levels in the past?
4,000.
4,000 parts per million. All right.
Oh, but now,
Hold on. I saw Al Gore say these are the highest levels in human history. If you look at the length, if you look at the age of the Earth and represented in hours of a day, the Earth is 24 hours old. Man has been around for 11 seconds out of the 24 hours. So it's true that we haven't been at 400 parts per million, but we've been at 1,000 parts per million. We've been at 4,000 parts per million in the Phanerozoic era, correct? Mm-hmm. Did you see warming, and do we know whether the warming came before the CO2 levels went up or as a result of the CO2 level?
Well, the Earth is almost always warming or cooling. The most dramatic example of that is this series of ice ages that we're living through in the last few million years. But during that time, for sure, there's a correlation between CO2 and temperature, but temperature always changes first and then CO2 follows.
Well, that doesn't help. Here's one of the quotes from the piece, and we'll also hopefully we can look at a couple of charts. The cessation of observed global warming for the past decade has shown how exaggerated NASA and other computer predictions of warming have been and how little they correlate. I hope we can look at, has there been any global temperature increase since 1998?
No.
And you can see that plotted by objective scientific organizations.
Yes, there are many records. There are surface records, there are satellite records.
Now, considering that CO2 has increased every year since concentration since 1998, I have seen them go back, the computer models, I've seen them go back to try to explain why there's been no warming since 1998. And the latest is that there's a layer in the middle of the ocean that's absorbing more heat than normal. Have you seen?
I've seen that, yeah.
And they'll also say that 15 years is too short a period to say that it's not happening. And yet their entire thesis is based on 150 years of warming out of a 4-billion-year-old planet. I didn't need you here, I don't think. I wasn't going to let you get to the point. I'm just trying to make the point that CO2 is not a demon. I wasn't going to let you get to the point where you're saying 1,000 parts per million would actually help the planet. That's your thesis, is it not?
Oh, yes. I think 1,000 parts per million would be better for the planet.
Well, how?
Well, agricultural productivity is already going up from the small amount of CO2 increase we've already had. If you look around the world, you find many greenhouse operators who put in several thousand parts per million
into their greenhouses.
Well, people don't want to live in those greenhouses, right? I mean,
would there be any negative effects of breathing 1,000 parts per million?
No, absolutely not.
You don't want to live there 1,000 parts per million?
Well, no, hold on. All I was going to suggest, and I'm not a scientist and I'm not an expert on this, so I will admit it's hard for me to push back, but I read, and the readings would suggest that we haven't had this amount of carbon while humans have been around. So we've talked about a lot of data over a very long period of time.
You are talking about 0.04%.
But we're not talking about a period where we've been around and we're here and what our impact is or is not.
Well, our primate ancestors were here when CO2 levels were 3,000 parts per million. That was roughly 70, 80 million years ago. That's when we evolved.
Not that long ago on a 4
and,
million year
old planet. So it was 10 times what it is now. And we also let our sailors and submarines live in atmospheres that are several thousand parts per million.
Professor, what can you explain to me why well-intentioned people that are – I can't imagine that they that if we go another 5 or 6 years where temperatures don't rise, they're going to have to revisit all of these models because it's going to be obvious that the anecdotal evidence isn't supporting
the
models that they've been. Will they go back and revisit it and maybe say, gosh, maybe we were wrong? What is it that causes it to be such a zealous, sort of almost a secular religion with these people?
Well, I think they already are revisiting the models, and many of them are saying they probably overestimated, numbers of many numbers in the models. You know, the models are extremely complicated. You know, you have the sun, you have the cooling, you have
water vapor.
Complicated.
Water vapor isn't a product of the hydrocarbon.
But when people talk about the increase in ocean levels, when you see these images up in Alaska or Greenland
of
the receding glaciers,
which receded prior to 1900.
How do you explain that, or do you write that off? What's the
Well, of course.
I'm just telling you as a spectator here.
Yes,
this is
okay.
What I see. This is what I read, and I need to understand what to think of it because you're telling me to think
sure.
of it very differently than the way it's being portrayed.
But. Yeah, you should make a trip to Glacier Bay, and that's very impressive. The glaciers there are all gone, and they disappeared in the 1800s. In fact, that was one of the most famous trips of John Muir, the founder of the Sierra Club, was to visit Glacier Bay in 1879, and he pointed out all the glaciers were gone. That was long before there was any increase of CO2.
So basically, to summarize, the stat that we keep seeing of 97% of climate scientists, they're wrong, and we should don't worry, be happy, burn, burn, burn. Is that the bottom line?
Well, first of all, the statistics on the 97% are a little phony. You know, if you look at the questions, they are, does CO2 affect the climate? I would say yes. Yeah, so I would be part of the 97%.
You wouldn't be asked because you're a physicist, though.
So they don't ask the question,
they don't,
let's freak
know, you,
out
you
and not
design
burn any more carbon.
To get any answer you wish.
What are the claims you're hearing that we're having these severe storms across the world, hurricanes and Sandy and stuff, because of climate change? Is that true?
That's even more preposterous than the length.
Well,
yeah,
you can look at the data. There's no evidence in the data.
There's no evidence that we're having storms because of this.
There were three storms that hit the East Coast, New York, that were twice as strong as Sandy in 1 year mm-hmm. in 1954, and that's only how many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so once again, real science disproving global warming, which is part of a cult. It is a cult. And the cult wants to come and take away your freedom. And so people locally say we can't grow the economy because this is a no-growth area. Why? Well, number one is because they don't want it to change. Change is inevitable. We're either going to have positive or negative change. But on another level, these people are servicing their cult. The Billy Garretts, the guy might as well have a stuffed owl on his shoulder when he's walking around. He used to work for the Forest Department, and I think he focused on obscure animals that are on the verge of extinction. But, you know, Mayor Ken talks down to you. Why? Because he's in a cult that tells him he's smarter than you. He's better educated than you. Anyway, Let's take a little break here. And I, you know what? I want some Hank Williams. I want to dedicate this to the mayor. Mayor Ken, it's time for you to get enlightened. We'll be right back.
Light, I saw the light, no more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
So anyway, I hope Mayor Ken is listening over his yogurt today. But here's a little bit of an introduction. I've got a guest for the next hour, or in the next hour. Here's Judge Gorsuch. A little bit from his opening statements, just in case you were curious.
Testimony you're about to give to the committee, being the whole truth. The whole truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated, and you may tell us what you want us to hear at this point.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Feinstein, members of the committee, I am honored and I am humbled to be here. Since coming to Washington, I've met with over 70 senators. You've offered me a warm welcome and wise advice. Thank you. I also want to thank the president and the vice president. They and their teams have been so gracious to me, and I thank them for this honor. I want to thank Senators Bennett and Gardner and General Cottrell for their kind introductions, reminding us that long before we're Democrats or Republicans, or Americans. Sitting here, I'm acutely aware of my own imperfections, but I pledge to each of you and to the American people that if I am confirmed, I will do all my powers permit to be a faithful servant of the Constitution and laws of this great nation. Mr. Chairman, I could not even attempt to do this without Louise, my wife of more than 20 years. The sacrifices she has made and her open and giving heart, they leave me in awe. I love you so much. We started off in a place very different than this one. Tiny apartment, little to show for it. When Louise's mother first came to visit, she was concerned by the conditions, understandably. As I headed out the door to work, I'll never forget her whispering to her daughter in a voice I think intended to be just loud enough for me to hear, "Are you sure he's really a lawyer?" To my teenage daughters watching out west, bathing chickens for the county fair, devising ways to keep our determined pet goat out of the garden, building a semi-functional plyboard hovercraft for science fair, driving 8 hours through a Wyoming snowstorm with high school debaters in the back arguing the whole way. These are just a few of my very favorite memories. I love you girls impossibly. To my extended family,
put on your earphones.
Here across Colorado, when we gather, it's dozens of us. We hold different political and religious views, but we are united in our love. And between the family pranks and the pack of children running rampant, whoever's hosting is usually left with at least one drywall repair. To my parents and grandparents, they're no longer with us, but there's no question on whose shoulders I stand. My mom was one of the first women graduates of the University of Colorado Law School. As the first female assistant district attorney in Denver, she helped a program to pursue deadbeat dads. And her idea of daycare sometimes meant I got to spend the day wandering the halls or tagging along behind the police officers. She taught me that headlines are fleeting. Courage lasts. My dad taught me that success in life has very little to do with success. Kindness, he showed me, is a great virtue. He showed me, too, that there are few places closer to God than walking in the wilderness or wading a trout stream.
I will guarantee you that this guy is going to get elected. He was very, very charming and very down to earth. He stood up and gave his wife a hug and thanked her and said he would be nothing without her. He talked about his life. He talked about the influences. He talked about being in 90% of the time being with the consensus of other judges. So he's mainstream. He's smart. He happens to be a natural law guy, which I find interesting because I think the only other person on the court that has that is Thomas. But we're talking about a first-rate presentation of oneself. Absolutely fantastic, stunning, really. I don't think there's any way to stop this guy without looking like maniac. 6:59, we're going to come back and talk to a local businessman about what it takes to make it in Las Cruces, and you'll hear a little bit about his business. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell, I'm Las Cruces, and got a little Hank Williams for you. Mayor Ken, please listen in. Time to have a conversion to conservatism.
Just like a blind man, I wandered along. Worries and fears I claimed for my own. Then like the blind man, the dark gave back his sight. Praise the Lord, I saw the light. I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy.
It's 7:06, and you know these days are getting hotter, so gird your loins. It looks like we're passing, as usual, from winter into summer. Today's the 21st, and we're lucky to have here in the studio Arif Khan from Thai India, which is a local restaurant, 1445 West Picacho Avenue. Ate there yesterday, had a very tasty meal, and I asked him if he was interested in coming on, and I didn't know that I was talking to a fellow conservative and political theorist. Good morning, Arif.
Good morning. How are you this
morning? Good. So anyway, tell us a little bit about yourself. Are you new in the community? Have you been here for a while?
I moved here last April 3rd, to be exact. So it'll be about a year coming up in a few weeks from Wisconsin.
All right. Better weather, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Every day has been just, I'm loving it. I'm just loving this weather, the environment. Everything.
Yeah, yeah. And okay, so you came in and you bought this business, and it used to be, I'm trying to remember, what was the name of it?
Renew's Thai Restaurant.
Yeah, Renew. Is that somebody, that was in somebody's name, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it's still a Thai restaurant,
mm-hmm.
but you told me on the break that you're going to be bringing in a little more Indian cuisine.
Right. It's Thai and Indian now. It used to be strictly Thai. combination is obviously my background. My wife is Thai, and I'm Indian. So I just thought that would be a good idea to include Indian as well.
All right. So what's it like to have a restaurant in Las Cruces?
Well, I've only had it for 3 months. I bought it in November. That's November. And we opened it in December 5. So we only had it for 3 months. The response has been very, very positive. People like the idea of different. Something unique, something different. And my idea of a restaurant is to provide not only the good food, but also to provide an experience of the culture. Both Thai and Indian cultures are very diverse, very much, I say, unique and diverse and colorful. So I want to bring that to Las Cruces. I want to bring that to people of Las Cruces. Very, very high quality.
Okay. And so we were talking about there's not an Indian restaurant in town.
No, there isn't.
Is there an Indian community here?
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of Indians that I've met through the restaurant and just being part of the community.
Now, one of the things that people notice about Indians, I think, is pretty typical observation is they're very business oriented.
Well, yes. I think that what happens is that most of the business owners and the business-oriented people from everywhere in the country, everywhere in the world gravitate towards the United States because we were supposed to be the bastion of hope for that idea that we are able to do the things that you can do any that you want to do without hindrance, without problems.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case everywhere else in the world. It's very difficult to have a business. For instance, I grew up in Kuwait. Unless you are a native-born Kuwaiti, you can't really have a business. You can't own a business. You can't operate a business.
Well, we were talking about this, you know, off the air. We were talking about the fact that the world is so much different than America, but we as Americans tend to project our culture when we're trying to understand other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
We assume other countries have the same religious rights. We assume mm-hmm. other countries have the same rights of contract or a right to have a business and stuff. It's actually not true.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. One of the challenges that we, as we've discussed, Americans have, that we have isolated ourselves into thinking that we have what everybody else has. That isn't the case. That's the reason why majority of the world wants to be part of society. They want to migrate here. They want to do this because we have this. When I was contemplating going outside after I graduated from a school in Kuwait, I had an opportunity to go to any country I wanted to go. I could go to Russia. I could go to Germany. I could go to England. I could go anywhere I wanted.
Your dad was an engineer, a petroleum engineer, so he was highly educated.
Yes. And I could go anywhere in the world to get my education, and I chose to come to the United States because what we have, the freedoms that we have, that we have taken for granted. We have just completely ignored that we have the best. There has not been a society in the world, if you look at the history of the world, there hasn't been a society ever that has fostered the idea that our constitution and our government
right.
is belonging to people. We're unique in that.
It almost seems like there has to be kind of a, like your generation of foreigners who come in and learn about America and find out about the founding fathers and really dig down deeper into these things than a lot of Americans do. And the appreciation level is higher.
Yes, absolutely. Because as I was growing up and I went to school in Kuwait, I went to American school in Kuwait, it was a required studying government, constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers. Those are required readings and subject matter that in order for me to graduate, I had to study that. And we don't teach that.
We don't teach it at all. Now, you said something earlier about communication. Mm-hmm. And we had said something is you said to me, to communicate, you have to listen.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. Without that, you cannot have a communication. All you could have is broadcast. Unless we have a dialogue, unless I'm willing to listen to what you have to say. I don't necessarily have to agree with everything you say, but I have to have an open mind to listen and give credence to whatever it is that you're saying and actually take into account your perspective. If I don't do that, there is no communication. There's absolutely no communication.
And there's no trust. I was just reading a book on communication the other day, and it said, you know, foundation for trust in a relationship is listening.
Absolutely. You can, I mean, one of the things that I talk about, absolutely, look at our makeup. If you look at our head, we have two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, and all of those orifices are designed for intake.
Right.
Only one is designed for both intake and out, which is our mouth.
Right.
But we use our mouth disproportionately. We talk a lot. We don't listen. And that's the problem. We need to quiet down and listen to
listening
other people.
Listening is hard.
Absolutely hard. One of the things that I teach my children, listening is the hardest thing that you will ever do. Because truly attentive listening requires a lot of energy, a lot of thought, and a lot of understanding. And especially when you're listening to someone who has diverse or opposite views than you do, you then have to do more than simply. And the moment we ignore that idea, the idea that we can somehow shut out everybody else and simply focus on ourselves, it's ludicrous to have a society which will prosper. You can't have that. It's just impossible.
But isn't that what we've got here is... And you see it in D.C. as two groups of people talking past one another?
Absolutely. We have no communication. We have this idea that I only possess the truth. And I am the only supporter of truth. Because that's not, that's just ludicrous. I mean, I just can't grab my mind around that idea that I somehow have all the answers, which I don't. Nobody does.
That's a fanaticism that believes that.
Yes.
Well, folks, we are talking to Arif Khan. How do you prefer your name pronounced?
Arif.
Arif Khan. And I do have a little one-way communication for the mayor. I saw the light, Hank Williams. I'm liking this better than the Doors. We're talking about a local restaurant, but also, more interestingly, the owner and his experiences. 715 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. To call in at 805-6180. Support your local businesses, folks. That's how we can grow our economy. We'll be right back.
I wandered the aimless life filled with sin. I wouldn't let my dear Savior in. Then Jesus came like a stranger in the night. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
Well, we got a lot going on in D.C. We've got hearings for Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. He'll get in, no problem. Hearings on Trump. Did he get wiretapped? Well, you can go either way on that. There seems to be some evidence, although officially they say there's none. And then is there any ties between Trump and Russia? So both sides are fighting for some version of this wiretapping or influence. In the meantime, locally, we have Arif Khan, owner of Thai India. And Arif is not just a restaurateur. He's a leadership expert who has a consulting firm to teach people how to thrive in business. Tell us a little bit about that. Tell us about your education at Purdue and how that, which is a very fine institution that gave us Drew Brees, if I'm not mistaken, and how that led you into what you're doing now.
Well, as we were just talking about, I went to school at Purdue. I went to a computer engineering degree and then also a minor in psychology. And after working as a computer engineer for a while with different major corporations, I decided to venture out into management consulting and leadership development because that's something that I think we're lacking. We don't teach leadership anymore. We don't teach...
Which is shocking in a way, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely it is. Because every organization, every society, everything that you look at in humanity rises and falls in leadership.
Right.
And we simply don't teach that. So I got involved in doing those things, and I do have, as I said, you know, a consulting and management firm based out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that's the reason why I moved here, because we wanted to open up New Mexico and then southern region to do management consulting. And the restaurant business is something that I kind of fell into it. My son has two restaurants in Indiana.
What are they, Indian?
No. One of them is steak and seafood, very high end, and another one is a little more casual, which is hop-based restaurant, like a lot of beer. He's got like 48 beers on tap, local beers, and then he has a brewery and things like that. So this particular restaurant was a client, kind of, and I was trying to get him to understand what needs to happen in order for them to grow, in order for them to do the things they need to do, and we just couldn't get together. His ideas and my ideas were totally different. And we ended up, you know, I ended up telling him, it's like one of us has to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I go or you go, because it's not working. And he decided that he wanted to, it was time for him to move out. So he moved to Florida. And so I ended up buying the restaurant. And it was kind of funny because my son, when I told him that what happened, he laughed at me. He goes, "Why?" I said, "What are you laughing about?" He goes, "Well, now you have to do what you've been teaching everybody how to do and show that."
Do you still have that restaurant?
One in Indiana?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we do have their very, very fine restaurant.
What's the name of it?
Baker Street is one, and the other one is Happy Gnome.
Baker Street. Classic.
Very, very classic.
Tube stop and classic song. So.
Yeah. So, and he does very well. I mean, he does like, you know, $6 to $7 million a year.
Baker Street. Pretty good.
Yeah. Thing that, you know, regardless of any business that we were talking about, whether it is a restaurant business, whether it is any other business, you have to have leadership. You have to have an understanding that people are important, not only your guests, not only your people that you do business with, but the people that you work with. All of the people make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot have any organization that has disdain for people and hope to survive.
Yeah.
You just can't do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of examples of that. What is your number of your consulting firm? So if people are interested in maybe getting a little training on leadership.
Well, they can call me at my, you know, my cell, which is 419-665-1456.
One more time, slowly.
419-665-1456.
And they'll get a hold of you.
They'll get a hold of me or at least get my voicemail.
And if somebody wants training and say, you know, I've got this great business idea, but I feel like I'm struggling locally, you can help them?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's take a break, and we're talking to Arif Khan and throwing a shout out to Mayor Ken to step into the light and embrace a gentleman by the name of Adam Smith. He's only wrote his book 300 years ago. 723 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Got some local news for you. We'll be right back talking about some local business. And listen, there's business opportunities out there, but with this tight economy, you got to be careful. You got to make the right moves. We'll be right back.
I saw the light. I saw the light. No more darkness. No more night. Now I'm so happy. No sorrow inside. Praise the Lord. I saw the light. Line up for tonight's Tuesday night on Facebook Street Live.
And we are here with Arif Khan. And just let me give you some headlines here. Trump to Capitol in last-ditch lobbying effort for health care bill. I don't know if it's going to make it. It's certainly in intensive care right now. Republicans working to repair divide. Conservatives claim votes to block. And meanwhile, Kim Jong-un blows up aircraft, U.S. aircraft carrier in new video. Four Democrats in general, no clear leader. DNC chair, steep climb to break GOP dominance. And the problem in the Democrats in the country is they tried to become a national party without worrying about being a local party, and it's been just a complete catastrophe. So while Obama was in office, state after state after state fell to the GOP. So the GOP broadly represents the will of the people, broadly represents the feelings of the frustrated, and now the Democrats have to try to fight their way back. And it's hard if you've been talking down to people for decades to regain your footing. So anyway, we have Arif Khan here. And so Arif, give us principles for, there's a lot of people who are business owners that listen in or who are in, have a stake in business in town, managers. What are some of the key principles to business success? If you just, you know, with the elevator speech, if you just had a few minutes to talk to somebody, they stopped you in an elevator and say, I know this is your expertise. What advice would you give them?
I have for everybody that I talk with is that you have to focus on leadership. Leadership is not a position. Leadership is not something that you have, that is something that you gain or that you're given. Leadership is
service.
Service.
Yeah.
Service requires that I ask people, what is service? What does it mean to serve? Truly to serve is to have a heart of a servant without regards to any kind of compensation. You must feel that you are there to help, to serve. And if you don't have that, you're going to fail. And it's not only just serving your customers, it's not only just serving your client or guests. It is everybody that you deal with, your vendors, the people that work for you, the people that you deal with.
Uh-huh.
You have to have that server's heart. And, you know, you look at that, and that's where the success starts from. If you don't have that, you're going to continuously struggle. You will continually find animosity amongst everybody. I mean, you can't have that. You can't have that attitude that you are somehow superior because you are a business owner or you are a boss or whatever it is. You must first have that serving attitude.
Give us an example of somebody you're talking about, the kind of person that you think is a business leader's servant.
Well, you can look at any successful business owners. I mean, you look at, we go back to, and I'll give you an example of Walmart. Right now, Walmart is one of the most hated organizations in the world.
Why?
Take care of their people.
But
if you look at the founder of Walmart, Sam Walton, he was truly a server. He was truly interested in providing a quality product to the people of this country. He went out of his way to do what was needed. I met Sam one time.
Who was he like?
Human being that I could ever possibly have. I mean, he was the down to earth, just an individual. He always drove in his, you know, old truck, and he never really put himself above everybody.
Well, from what I understand, one of the reasons he wanted to open Walmart is to save people money,
That's
poor.
Right.
We've got a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes, sir. Kelly, I apologize for calling so much today. I won't call anymore for the rest of the week. I was very interested in hearing this gentleman, and I wish you well, sir, and great success. For you to be so derogatory, you're not talking to the wrong people. You're talking to the wrong people concerning Walmart.
Bob,
you would understand my position.
Bob, you are a Walmart worker.
I was.
And, okay, so...
No, he has a very biased opinion. I think he's wrong, okay?
All right.
Do you want to comment?
Would
you like to comment?
Who are you talking to, me or him?
Him.
Did he want to...
Both of you.
Hold on, Bob. I know you're all fired up here, but I've never worked there. And I think that when I go to Walmart, a lot of times the employees seem like they're not happy. That's my impression. I could
That's
be wrong.
Business. Oh, if you want to be a slave, you work at a restaurant.
Folks, if you're going to call in, don't yell over me. Don't yell over Bob Pills for a second here. Now,
I already have.
All right. So take a few more. Take another handful. You got,
I know. I'm
Bob. Bob.
Okay, I apologize,
Bob.
Kelly, but I don't appreciate somebody who doesn't know anything about Walmart start trashing them on the airwaves.
Well, that's free speech, my friend.
It's poor speech.
Oh, my God. Would you take another fistful of pills? Call us back after you do that. All right. Okay, so, yeah, your response here.
Well, the fact is that I do know about Walmart. I have done some consulting work for Walmart. I have known Walmart. I have dealt with Walmart as a manufacturer. I have had contracts. So I know very intimately how Walmart works. I know exactly how Walmart works. So
what's the main problem in terms of being an employee at Walmart, if you could sum it up?
Well, you have a problem when an employee of Walmart cannot afford to buy at Walmart because they don't get paid enough.
Wow.
That is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
When a CEO of Walmart makes billions of dollars and a janitor cannot afford to buy food.
But isn't Walmart the cheapest place to buy stuff?
Yes, that's exactly my point.
Uh-huh.
So, and I'm not saying anything bad about Walmart is one of the largest corporations.
You can say anything you want. This is a beacon of free speech here.
What I'm saying to people that you asked me a question, you know, who do I admire? Sam Walton is one of the person that I do admire because what he stood for and what he meant and why he created Walmart. As we were talking about, he wanted to provide a quality product, an American-made quality product to the people who couldn't afford to buy a good quality product.
So how did everything end up getting made in China?
Because they lost sight. They lost the vision.
All right.
So,
you know, I was thinking, I had said this on the air, this is a year or two ago, having Walmart in your community is like having China move into your community.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, something happened, I mean, I would shop at Walmart all the time. I'll be the first to admit that. And for the prices. But there's something has happened at Walmart.
The thing that, you know, when I speak, when this gentleman called me and he says, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm speaking from experience because I have dealt with Walmart
As a client.
Not only as a client, but also as a supplier to Walmart. I had a manufacturing company in Wisconsin that supplied product to Walmart, and I have had contracts with them. And how they treat their vendors, how they treat their suppliers, is completely opposite of what you and I are talking about, leadership.
I want to say one thing. You don't have to treat people that way to have a successful
business.
No,
you don't. When you look at the idea that I can be successful by destroying you is completely against every principle of success.
Yeah.
I can be successful. There is not a reason for us to continue, and we'd go back to the same thing that you were talking about, growth. A lot of time we have this idea there is only so much to go around. So we fight over this little pot.
And that's the Marxist theory of economics, is that there's a set economy, whereas Adam Smith said,
no, it is elastic.
If there's not enough pie,
bake
another pie.
Exactly. You don't have to fight over the same thing. You can go out and create more.
Right. Well, let's take a break here. We have Arif Khan. Very, very interesting conversation. And I've got a few clips for you here on, let's see here. Well, let's do a couple of clips. One is severely damaging weather that is nipping into New Mexico a little bit. And then another California story, more moisture coming into California, OMG. And then a little local weather. 737 flying those friendly skies. Bob, take a chill pill, please. Come on now. 523-1450, 805-6180. We'll be right back.
From Indianapolis, Indiana. This is, of course, on Monday. And we are going to be greeting more of the spring season as we get through the next couple of days with rounds of storms, including some across the south for today. So this is the Tuesday outlook. which you can see is going to bring those storms in across much of Tennessee, northern Alabama, and also northern Georgia. One thing that we'll also say about these storms is they're going to be pretty quick to roll in and fairly quick to roll out, certainly picking up on a few heavy rounds of rain, very low tornado threat with this, but the main impacts that we're concerned about is hail, which we just showed you, as well as potential for damaging winds. The late week severe setup is something that we're going to have to watch for. There's our upper level system that works in, plenty of moisture feeding through. The time frame for this is still later in the day on Thursday. So from late Thursday afternoon into the evening, and then more so really late Thursday night into Friday, we're going to have to watch closely for these developments. Still pressing along with that severe threat as we go through Friday and Friday night, and again on Saturday, that threat continues to spread east.
Stormy seas in San Diego. That is exactly what we've seen across the Pacific, not just California, but really the Pacific throughout the winter. We have definitely put a dent in the California drought. In fact, the past decade, it's been really hard to get any rain at all. Now we're making up for it because look at the current snow cover in the Sierra. Once this starts to melt, you're going to really start to see, I hope not flooding conditions, but any drought that's left over is pretty much going to be wiped out. The only place we can really find it is in the southern part of the state now, and that's going to get a little bit of a dent taken out of it as we watch the Pacific become active again. A couple of storm systems roll their way in, especially Wednesday for Southern California, so you'll get some much-needed rainfall there. Actually, some pretty good accumulations around San Diego, just about an inch. Los Angeles, an inch there, and then you get into the mountains and it really starts to pile up. Again, a foot to a foot and a half of new snow expected through the Sierra.
All right, 7:41, and we're here with Arif Khan, who owns Thai India. It's on the corner of essentially Valley and Picacho, 1445 West Picacho, a little bit off the corner on the Picacho side. So, Arif, what is it in general? What do you think it's like to have a business here, to start a business? What are some of your reactions that make cruises maybe a little different from other places?
Well, I mean, obviously, as we've been discussing, there is a lack of leadership, not only in Las Cruces, but lack of leadership all across the country. And one of the challenges that we have here, especially here, is that we have this idea that somehow we are different and that we cannot have any growth here. We cannot have anything positive that comes out. And a lot of people have said that to me, that business environment here is very difficult. Well, my question to all of those people who say that the business environment is difficult is that, okay, so what are we going to do about it? Are we going to simply ignore the fact and continue to live in this bubble that, you know, business environment is very, very difficult? Or are we going to do something to make a difference or change it? Because I don't believe that any community is so devoid that it cannot grow, that it cannot be prosperous.
But the leadership says we're no growth. To me, this reminds me of a segment out of The Hills Have Eyes, which is a famous New Mexico movie about nuclear mutants who are trying to kidnap the people that drive through. But, you know, I mean, we could have a better business community here, right?
Absolutely.
What would you change? Okay, you're the mayor. I'm going to make you the king for a year. What changes do you bring in?
I bring in the leadership, because see, what you just said is an oxymoron. When it says leadership says it's no growth, that is an oxymoron. Leaders don't talk about no growth. Leaders lead. Leaders provide a roadmap, parity for ingenuity. They provide that. And anyone who thinks that they are a leader, by stifling the growth, by stifling the ingenuity, by stifling the community, and simply saying, no, we cannot grow, that's not leadership.
Okay, so one of the things that I'm just going to interpret from your answer, one of the things that you'd do is you'd go down to City Hall and you'd find out what it takes to get a business permit, and you'd get rid of all the red tape.
Absolutely.
That doesn't add to growth.
Exactly. I would absolutely. I mean, I have this, here's my own experience. When I bought this restaurant, the city has this ordinance, I guess, that somehow some, you know, the signs have to be certain distance from
sure.
the road
yeah.
and all that kind of thing. And that's perfectly fine. All I want to do is change the name on the sign that exists there.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for me to go do that, I have to go through this whole process of reevaluating everything. The sign already is there.
That's retarded.
I don't have to change anything. I'm not going to modify anything. I'm just going to repaint it and do put a different name on it.
So that's why, you know, when people open a business in El Paso, it takes them 24 hours, 72 hours, whatever, 48 hours to get a business permit. Here, it's just an agonizing process.
Right. It is. And it is ridiculously
backwards.
Well, it's shooting yourself in the foot. You know, you're saying that, you know, this idea that this guy goes to the doctor and says, doctor, I have a pain in my foot. And the doctor says, what seems to be the problem? He says, I keep hitting it with the hammer. And the doctor said, well, stop doing that. He says, but I love it so much. That's the whole concept here. It's like, you know, we continue to do stupid things and we have to stop doing that.
But, I mean, so how is it that a city got away with having leadership that actually got up and bragged about being no growth? I mean, how is that possible?
Well, the possibility is because we have stopped the process of encouraging people. Most people don't want to be part of this conversation. Most people just have given up the idea to participate in the process. And, you know, that's the reason why we have this country that is in such a bad shape, because majority of our people don't participate.
Because we're not trained to participate.
Right.
We're not trained to listen. We're not trained to talk. We don't know what the founding fathers stood for,
right,
et cetera. All right. So you're the mayor of this town and you look around and you realize there are thousands, maybe 10,000 empty business properties, which is a total catastrophe.
Yes.
In many different ways.
Yes.
What could you possibly do to stimulate?
Well, we'll encourage people to come here. We give them incentives to come here to work. We will do whatever it is needed. You know, there are cities that have lots of opportunities. You know, the idea that by giving incentives to businesses to come and operate here is somehow taking away from our own prosperity. But that is not the case. It is impossible for a business to come in here and prosper and not have a positive impact on the economy of this, the growth. When my business grows, it is not in isolation. I have to hire people to work for me. I have to do business with vendors that bring in business here. They have to hire people.
Ripple effect.
Then not only that, when my business grows, I provide a good quality product to people who are happy, mm-hmm. who are excited about that. But the ultimate result is that I end up paying taxes.
Right.
I have to pay to the city, the community. I use the resources, and I pay for that.
And people don't have to go to El Paso to get Indian food. Right?
Or Albuquerque or anywhere. I want people from Albuquerque to come here. I want people from El Paso to come here. Bring that revenue here.
Absolutely. All right, we'll take a break here. And just to, by the way, Rendezvous Restaurant, which is another – exotic place, sponsoring the show. It's on the corner of a motel in Picacho. Beautiful food. It's open for breakfast and lunch. Ask for Terry. And a number to call, 575-527-0098. Incredible food. It's French, and it is everything you ever wanted in a restaurant. We'll take a break here and come back and continue to talk. We'll finish her up with Arif Khan. We'll be right back. 748 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450, 805-6180. I'll get to your texts as well.
Just like a blind man, I wandered along. Worries and fears I claimed for my own. Then like the blind man, the dark gave back his sight. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
You can do 1 hour free for anybody who wants to talk to you.
All right. So, RF, is there any chance you would put together a little meeting for people who are interested in business that you could just maybe do a very short seminar for people who want to start businesses or learn how to grow their business?
Yes.
This is off the top of my head. I didn't ask them off the air.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I was going to be speaking at the church. They were having a program. I think it's the Calvary Church here, Frank Moreno.
Calvary Chapel, maybe? Or is it just Calvary?
I'm not sure exactly. It was Frank Moreno, the farmer's insurance guy, was putting together. It's called the Better Men, where we were going to teach leadership. And I want to do that. I want to create an environment where people can come and do this thing. And it doesn't have to be any elaborate process. If somebody wants to get together informally, I would love to have that opportunity to, you know, contribute my time and talent to the growth of this city's businesses. That was my stated purpose. One of the things that I did in when I started Thai India, one of the stated objective of Thai India is to, we want to continue to do business locally. I want to promote as much local business as I possibly can, because their growth is my growth. My growth is their growth.
Yeah. Somebody who has a job somewhere else has a little more money to come to your restaurant.
Exactly.
And vice versa. Exactly. You have another restaurant to go to or another business. Right. And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show is this.
This is Kay. I'd like to hear more about the restaurant. Mr. Khan, your name suggests you're a Punjabi. Could we look forward to North Indian food?
I am not a Punjabi, but yes, you can look forward to the North Indian food and everything else. As next month, we will be introducing our new menu, which will have about 4 different items on it. And 2 of those items are Northern Indian. And we will continue to introduce different cuisines from different parts of India. Indian cuisine is so diverse, but absolutely, you can look forward to that. You can look forward to that as well.
Thanks, Kay.
I will be there. Thank you.
Thank you, Kay. Good call. Thanks. All right, folks. Let me just point one thing out, because I got some books on servant leadership, which is the model that you're using for a business example. The preeminent, since we're talking about doing this at a church, the preeminent example of that is Jesus.
Yes.
Because Jesus said, I came not to be served, but to serve. And so there is something about the Christian model, the model of Jesus, that is very enchanting. And the idea that, you know, the Christian idea that God comes to earth to serve mankind, you know, in human form is kind of, obviously, to say the least, revolutionary. But I think there is something to this, as you put it into effect, that it could revolutionize a business.
Yes, and it has. You know, I mean, I follow John Maxwell. John Maxwell talks about the servant leadership.
And John Maxwell is actually a Christian
preacher.
Yeah, and
he started his leadership as the church.
Yeah,
and the thing that, you know, we have forgotten, that, you know, Jesus came to serve. Jesus came, and the things that he taught was serving. Serving people. And he didn't serve the elite, he didn't serve the kings, and he served the people who were downtrodden, who were the less of the, you know, that's the thing that we need to focus on. Servers are, you know, if you want to be a leader, you need to be a server.
Right.
And if you cannot be a server, you cannot be a leader.
Right.
Leaders serve. That's the only way to lead. There is no other way to lead. The other thing that people think is dictatorship.
Yeah.
That's not leadership.
Yeah.
There's a difference between, you know, telling people what to do and then serving them when they need that.
Yeah.
So that's what I focus on, and that's what I would like to bring to everybody that I talk with.
If they come to your restaurant, they can talk to you.
Absolutely.
All right. I got a couple of notes here. RE, no growth, keep an eye on plan for Las Cruces, yuppie idealism for predominantly agricultural blue-collar community. And the truth is hard to hear, but the truth needs to be shouted from the roof, especially the rooftops of the boarded up empty buildings in town. And welcome to Las Cruces, Mr. Khan. We've been waiting about 25 years for an Indian restaurant to come to our town. And this Khan for mayor, he's the right stuff. Isn't it weird? It takes an outsider to tell us to shape up. And what about burritos, and that is from Frankie. Frankie, folks, needs some prayer. He's laying in bed. He's taking liquid sustenance. He's depressed since Trump got elected. So some prayers for Frankie. Little Frankie is not himself. There is no Jesus or God. Frankie, just stay in bed and keep nursing your Jack Daniels. He'll feel better in about 10 years. So, all right. So, well, we got to do this again.
Yes,
this is
absolutely.
Very, very illuminating.
I would love to.
One more time, the location of your restaurant.
1445 West Picacho Avenue, corner of, as you said, Valley and Picacho. And as I was saying, you know, any business owner that wants to have a conversation, I would, you know, gladly sit down and spend an hour just to have, you know, whatever it is that they want to ask. I'd love to serve.
And you're not threatened by other businesses?
Absolutely not.
And it could be a restaurant?
Anybody. I mean, I have, you know, great admirations for successful businesses, great admiration for successful restaurants. The more that we have, the better it is. Because
absolutely.
Not everybody is going to be doing the same thing. And so that's the problem, that we think that, you know, somehow if you grow, I will diminish. And that is not the case.
All right, folks. Well, it's great to have RF Khan on. And like I say, we're going to do this again because we really got to do something here. All right. So we're looking at, in D.C., a fight over Russia, the Russian involvement. There's no proof that Trump was actively involved in Russia. Apparently, according to authorities, there's no proof that Trump was wiretapped. But if so, why so many articles in different publications about information that was taken away from Trump? And I think the reason is the feds were looking into Russia and accidentally stumbled into Trump, or on purpose. And there's more of the story there. In any event, Gorsuch seems like the best thing I've heard of in a long time. A natural law judge who's very down to earth on the Supreme Court. Thanks for tuning in. And Mayor Ken, please take this to heart. It's time to have a come to Jesus moment. Time to see the light. 7:59. Thanks again to Arif Khan, and get down to his Thai India restaurant, and we'll see you back in 22 hours. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. Ciao.
I saw the light. I saw the light. No more darkness. No more night. Now I'm so happy. No sorrow inside. Praise the Lord. I saw the light.